Welcome to the Beyond Bankies Gardening Podcast, bringing you interviews with gardeners, plant lovers, and other industry experts. With you by our side, we are growing forward together and nurturing the minds and souls of gardeners both new and old. Check us out at our website, beyondbankies.com. Now, your host for today's podcast, former Vice President of Banky Nurseries and the proud granddaughter of its founders, Albert and Rose Banky, here is Stephanie Fleming.
Hi, everyone. I want to welcome you to episode 6 of the Beyond Bankies Gardening Podcast. It's hard to believe that it's July already. By the time this episode airs, the 4th of July will already be over and we'll be in the middle of summer. I sure hope you're enjoying these lazy days of summer, staying cool, enjoying your summer garden. I know I have been enjoying all the beautiful daylilies and other blooming plants that my husband has out in the garden. I want to give one quick tip that I can share with you during these hot days. Try watering your garden early in the morning. This gives your plants time to use the water and get through the heat of the day, unless they have time to dry off so you don't end up having any kind of diseases on them when the nights cool down. So anyhow, let's get into today's episode. We're going to be talking about the Smithsonian Gardens in Washington, D.C., plus what it was like to work at Banky Nurseries and for my grandfather, Albert Banky. For those of you listening that worked for him or Banky's, you'll appreciate my next guest as he shares some of what went on behind the scenes at Banky's. And for those of you that were our customers, and maybe knew my grandfather, I hope you enjoy this episode about what made Banky's Banky's. So I feel like I've known our next guest forever. As with so many that worked at Banky's, Alex Danker started as a young man and stayed for about 25 years. Started working in retail sales at our Beltsville locations. He moved up quickly to work for my grandfather, Albert Banky, at his garden in Burtonsville. Before he left Banky's, he was the manager of each of our locations in Beltsville, Largo, and Potomac. So thank you, Alex, for joining us today. How you doing?
Great. How are you? Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited. Let's just get right into it. And Alex, how old were you when you started working at Banky Nurseries?
Let's see. I think it was my late teens. If I do the math real quick, I think it was 18.
18. Okay. Well, you're a little older than like Alfred, who started at 14.
That's right. I started late. Yeah,
you started late in the game. And what made you decide to come work at the nursery?
Well, I mean, I've always been an outdoorsy kind of guy, you know, hiking and backpacking when I was a teenager and that kind of thing. And really, I just needed a job to, you know, pay the bill. You know,
go on dates?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff. But, you know, gas money. And then when I got into college, you know, health insurance and, you know, and tuition and things like that. And just paying the bills, being a kid. And I thought to myself, what about that plant place? We had a neighbor when I was a kid, and she loved Lord Baltimore hibiscus. And she used to just go on and on and on. She used to put her hands up in the air and go, this big red flower, you just got to get it. And I remember being a kid and her telling me that, you know. And then later on, and then she says, and the best place to get them is this place down the road. It's called Banky's. Really? Okay. And then when I was looking for a job, I thought, why not? What the heck? And I remember the summer before when I was still in high school, I worked at a construction company and all these really, really great, big, hairy old guys were kind of my bosses. One day I'd work with the carpenter, the next day I worked with the plumber, the next day I worked with the mason guy, and I'd be running back and forth between the truck to the job site there, hauling tools, hauling brick, hauling, you know, whatever. And then I did that all day long. And I remember when the summer started, there was like 20 of us kids, you know, and by the end of the summer, I was the only one left. But I also remember that it was really, really hard work. I learned a lot, but it was really, really hard work. So that was kind of in my mind. So then the next summer, when I needed a job to do kind of the same thing, you know, get me outside, do something new, be kind of interesting. I thought, why don't I stay outside, be working with my hands? I like that. But let me do the, what do you call it, plants. You know what I mean? Because I remember my neighbor, Mrs. Bosley, always mentioned Lord Hartley. So I drove to Banky's and the rest is history. And I remember Lori Hicks was my first person that I met when I got to the office there.
So wait a minute. Did you start in the spring like many of our employees did? And then in June, they decided they would keep you? Or did you come and get to start in the summer?
No, actually, it was May 10th, Mother's Day weekend.
Right. Everybody got hired.
Mother's Day weekend was my first day. I'll never forget that. And of course, it's like probably the busiest day of the year. And so it's probably not the easiest thing in the world to do when it's so crowded. And of course, all these questions, even if a simple question, I didn't know the answer to that. Like, where's the bathroom?
Number one question at Banky Nurseries, where's the bathroom?
Exactly. And the other big one was where the tomatoes. And of course, I didn't know what that was. And of course, hopefully I had to run around and find that. Of course, that was the challenging part because you don't know anything. And it's really hard to keep your head above water in that situation. But, you know.
So now I always thought, and I guess I'm wrong, I thought your mom and my grandparents were friends.
No, actually, after I started working in Burtonsville, she came up there to see me. And she got out of the car and I introduced them. And I, you know, my mom was born and raised in Germany. And my mom immediately just dove into the German and started speaking German. And he was like, and he goes, English only. And he goes, I'm an American and English is, and being an American is how I made our life, the nursery. And my mom was somewhat taken aback by that. And then she walked around and looked at the garden. And then he was cutting roses or something. And he gave her a bouquet of roses. When he handed it to her, he said it all in German, which I thought was funny. So I guess maybe he got that in his mind, like, wow, that was pretty cool. Let me try that. You know, it just must be feel neat to be a native speaker in one language and then don't use it every day. And then all of a sudden have the opportunity when you meet someone who has that, you know.
He and my grandmother spoke in German all the time. So he did use it.
Yeah. So then they, you know, every time they got together there, she would say a German word and he'd say, wow, I haven't heard that in years. And he would chuckle and so forth. So I thought that was always pretty cool.
Okay. So I didn't know that. Once you started working and they kept you on, I take it you went on to college. And what were you taking in college? Were you going to be a horticulture major? Or?
No, actually, I was studying political science with a double major in history. And I loved it. It was great. But also, I loved being outside. I loved the horticulture environment. And that's where I worked. And it worked out pretty well, I think. Because the nursery, one of the great things about the nursery for young people, it was very flexible hours. If you think about it, the nursery is open. After you get home from school, the nursery is open 7 days a week, right? In the spring, you can work as many hours as you possibly can. So it was great for a young person, either in high school or college.
Right.
So it was good for me.
And
so.
You went to Maryland?
Yep, University of Maryland.
University of Maryland, which was right up the street from us.
Exactly.
Okay, so you worked there while you went to college. And did you take any horticulture classes?
No, actually, no, I never did. No, actually, it was all everything else. So, and I always figured that the best place to be to learn plants was Banky University.
Yeah, Banky University.
I always said that was the best place. I mean,
well, I remember my grandfather would say, oh, you went to college. Oh, you majored in that. Oh, yeah. Well, I won't hold that against you.
Yeah, exactly. He and I would talk about that a lot. He'd say, college, that's great if you're going to be a brain surgeon or something like that, or you build a nuclear power plant. But other than that, get it.
So how did you end up being from retail, end up as one of the gardeners, actually became my grandfather's right-hand man up in Burtonsville?
Well, actually, I started in Beltsville in 87. And the next spring, so it would have been in May of 88, Lynn Cohen called me into the office. And I said, yeah. And she says, hey, we have an opportunity for you to go to Burtonsville to work for Mr. Banky. He's got a big job down there. So we had the main house there at the big 10-acre place. Then we had the garage. And between the garage and 198, there was this strip. And that big strip, he wanted to put all grasses and daylilies and coreopsis and stuff like that. So, and Aproskia and all those kind of sun-loving perennials. So it was a big, big area. It's quite large. And he just needed another body. And of course, I heard so much about Burtonsville and everybody was afraid of him. And I was like, oh, boy, I don't know if that's a good idea. But I also knew that spring was kind of coming towards the end and I didn't want to be left without a job. So I said, 2 weeks be kind of interesting. And she says, yeah, it'll be great. And she really talked me into it and talked it up. So we have Lynn to thank for all this. And that was it. And I went up there and I lasted the 2 weeks. And at the end of the 2 weeks, he said, would you want to make it permanent? Just threw it out there. We hadn't talked about it yet. And I was like, well, let's see. And of course, I like the idea of being at the nursery and get to socialize more and talk to more people and that stuff. But right then and there, he asked me, and you could see that he wanted an answer right away. So I was like, yeah, well, I guess so. And then I ended up staying for 5 years.
You have an interesting story that I thought maybe you could share about your first day in Burtonsville.
Well, yeah, I mean, because like when Lynn asked me that, I had never been up to Burtonsville before. And I said, well, where do I go? And what kind of place is it? What do you mean it's his house? I mean, and she's trying to explain it all to me. And she says, well, I'll tell you what, just when you drive up there, come to McNew Road, make the third entrance, right? And you drive all the way around, keep following the path all the way around. I drove around and she said, whatever you do, don't be late. And there's a mulch pile, park next to the mulch pile and you'll find Mr. Banky and then take your instruction from there. I was like, okay, how hard can that be? I happen to live right down the street, about 5 miles by coincidence, which is also very convenient. So, and I'm never late to anything. So I got there, not 7 o'clock like I was supposed to, but I was there early, like 6:45. And I drive all the way around, just like I said, oh, there's the mulch pile, park in front of the mulch pile. And I'm looking around and I don't see anybody. So, and what I used to do is I used to tie my shoes in the car because that would save at traffic lights and so forth, save time. So I wouldn't have to do that at home. So I'm sitting there tying my shoe and I think I had a big donut or a bagel or something like that. And I'm eating that and I'm tying my shoe and I'm looking around, don't see anybody, 15 minutes before time. And all of a sudden it's the biggest bam. And I get scared and I'm still sitting in the car. And I look to my left out to the the driver's window, and his face is about 1 inch from the glass. His nose is and his breath is frosting up my window. And he said, very angry, he says, when you're up here, you never sit down. And I'm like, what? And then he walks away and he expects, I guess that means follow me. So I get out of the car and of course my shoes are untied. And he says, when you're up here, you never sit down. I said, I'm so sorry, Mr. Banky. I didn't know where to park. And you, well, and besides, it's only, 6:50. I'm early still, aren't I? And he goes, no, come with me. And then he goes, what's your name again? And of course, he immediately forgot it when I told him my name was Alex. He still called me the boy. And before I could say anything, he said, do you like dogs? And I said, well, yeah. And just as I said, yes or no, he gave me Rusty, the leash to the dog. So I've got the dog in one hand, I've got my donut in the other hand, because I didn't know what to do with it. Both my shoes are untied, and I'm trying to follow him. And as I'm following him with this all this going on, he starts giving me instructions. All these flats need to get picked up and moved over there. And besides, and that hose, I don't know who put that there. That doesn't belong there. He started giving me instructions. I have no idea what he's talking about. Of course, the dog wants my donut. I'm trying to think, maybe I could tie my shoes. But as I'm bending down, tie my shoes, then my donut got lower. And then the dog was going for that. And it was like that. And of course, I kid you not, it went downhill from there. It just did not stop. And we had a guy named Paul and we got a guy named Tim. They both got there about 7 o'clock. And it was 100 miles an hour all day long. And of course, I'll never forget. I thought to myself, this is an old guy. He's over 80 now. This can't possibly last all day. At some point he's going to go, I'm tired. I need a nap. I'm going to go in. I'll be back in a couple hours to see how you're doing. I thought maybe, he's so exuberant. He's so over the top. You figure, well, he couldn't possibly keep up this pace all day. Well, believe me, he did. It never stopped. He might be once or twice that day went inside for lunch and maybe he said, I'm going to go drive down to the nursery. But other than that, he was underfoot all day. I always do that. But this particular day, I think because we had that big project to do. And it was like that all for the 2 weeks. It never stopped.
Tell our listeners a little bit about Burtonsville. And I mean, right now people might be thinking, well, why would Banky's be having guys up there in the private gardens? So what was special about Burtonsville?
Burtonsville was a great place for me to be because think of it like, I don't know, I'll be able to sit down with Albert Einstein and learn mathematics or something, or, learn how to build an airplane from the Wright brothers or something. Really, really. I mean, what's cooler than that, right? A guy who's an absolute expert, a guy that's had his hand in the dirt for 60, 70 years. It's really the best. So that was number one. And number two, it was a beautiful place. The home was nicely situated, lots of trees, which I love. And then there was lots of things going on. So in the summertime, we had probably, I don't know, maybe 1,000 ears of corn. We had probably maybe 50 blueberries, nice sized bushes. There was probably 30 tomatoes. There was every year we did about 19,000 annual plants. We always went down to the nursery and grabbed all the leftover tulips and stuff. And we put them in a big box and mixed them all up. We might plant 16,000 tulips in the fall, which was always a lot of fun. Of course, the roses, we had probably, 2,000 roses, maybe something like that.
Were you ever allowed to cut any roses?
No, usually I had to walk behind him and I had to hold the bouquet in my arms while he picked and he held them over his shoulder like that. And I had to grab them, of course. He didn't have gloves on and I didn't have gloves on. And of course, grabbing a rose was always never a good idea, but I said, doesn't that hurt? And he goes, no, not really. well, it hurt me a lot. So you just kind of do what he wanted to on a daily basis every day.
And so what kind of things, you talked about what we planted and everything there. So I know that he had, they were like self-directed tours through there. And didn't he grow special things?
Well, certainly there was a driveway, that big loop around the back of the property. It was a kind of a gravel driveway throughout the whole 10 acres. And there was a big sign that said, responsible visitors are welcome. So that was a great sign. And you could drive in and park your car and then walk around. And he was totally, you know, he let people, I always thought was a fascinating approach. And we had a lot of things that we grew on that probably took a lot of time that maybe the nursery wouldn't want to necessarily do. So, for instance, we had a big collection of hoopsie spruce.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, the beautiful powdery blue color. And whereas you put spruce in the ground, they might take, I don't know, 10 years, whatever, before they look mature. Well, we wouldn't want to do that couldn't do that in Beltsville, didn't want to do that at the Largo location. So why not find a nice spot in the garden in Burtonsville and put in a couple hundred or whatever, how many of those, big glob of them. There was a lot of things around the yard, like, and there was a beautiful aralia, variegated aralia that was very pretty, Cydopodus, which is Japanese umbrella pine, which was gorgeous, had several of those. So they had some nice specimens as far as shrubs that you probably wouldn't see anywhere else.
And didn't he do like test roses, and there was the Evangeline Bruce, and which was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep, sure. The Evangeline Bruce was great, and of course, he always loved to tell that story about how he came in contact with them. And then there were some other roses that he told me they were given to him years and years and years ago by like Jackson Perkins and Weeks and people like that. Like the actual, there was somebody named Jackson and there was somebody named Perkins, like friends of his or something back in the old days. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
And then he did daylilies because I have one named after me.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the daylilies was always a big deal. We would dig and divide in probably late August. We did the irises, if I remember correctly, in early August. So those were always, really, really cool.
And of course, your hibiscus were there.
Yeah, that's right. The hibiscus, absolutely. You know, Lady Baltimore, Lord Baltimore, Anne Arundel, all those beautiful color.
So what were some of the perks of being up there besides having this old German teaching you everything? Did you ever get some of my grandmother's blueberry pancakes?
Well, there was always something like that. One time I remember, and you might have been there, I can't remember. I know Roland was there. He asked me in because you guys were having crabs, and I was on the back of the house. See, around the back of the house, he had this giant pole with this huge, really, really antique-looking school bell. And he had a string to the back of the house, and he could yank that bell, and then I would come running. Well, he would yank that bell, and I'm kind of, yes, sir, how can I help you? And he goes, well, we've got all this food, and we don't know what to do with it. Come on in. I'm like, okay. So I come in, and the whole Banky kingdom is there sitting around the table. And I think I sat down, and I just dug in and got to eat crabs with you guys. So that was, I'll never forget that one. But there was always, and he always made a big bouquet of roses for me to bring home to my mom. That was always pretty cool. It always made her day. There was always, what I just appreciated was once you got past all the hurricane, if you will, and all the huffing and puffing, he was just a delight to talk to about plants or for that matter, about anything else. We talked about politics. We talked about sports. I talked about NFL football. So we did that a lot. And so we had a great time with that. But it took about, I want to say, maybe almost a year and a half before things got to be, I remembered it from the year before, right? And I could go with the flow as far as what needs to happen. If he literally would say, you know, here we have to go do this and this and this. Here, run to the garage and get the thing that we used for this. I have no idea what you're talking about. What's the thing? You know, and of course I couldn't say that because then he would yell at me. So I took off running and got to the garage. And you go in there and there's this giant garage, looks like a Smithsonian for tools. There's all these old farming implements that don't make any sense. And I grab it and, oh, this got to be it. I run out there and he's like, not that thing, the other thing. And I was like, mistake, you know, and then he would get mad at you. But then after a while, I remember from one year to the next, oh, it's this one. Oh, it's that one. And he didn't have to spell it all out. So then my stock in his eyes went way up, and then better for me too, because I stopped getting yelled at, which was good. So,
yeah. So you left him, then you went, and I know you managed all three of our locations. How did that come about?
when your grandfather passed away right after Christmas that year, the next spring, I went down to perennial production, and I was the grower for perennials until, I think, 96 and 95, the first of the year. And then I worked in Largo retail for 96, 97. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then in 98, I became the manager in Potomac. And then after that, I was manager in Beltsville. And then in 2009, 2008, I went back to Potomac one more time.
Wow.
So I kind of bounced around wherever I needed to go. And I think somewhere in there, when people left, I think I went to Potomac for about a month to help out when someone left. And then I think if I went back to Largo once, I think like 2004, again, to help out for a month or two until they found someone else.
Well, what was it about Bankies that, besides my grandfather's winning personality, that made you want to stay?
I always felt like it just, I guess the easiest way to say, when I got out of the car, I just felt like totally at ease, very comfortable. And I almost felt like I was, this sounds strange, but I almost felt like I was at home. I didn't feel like I was at work. I felt like, and the people I was working with, I felt like were on my side. I felt like we were all working together. I felt like it was like family,
right?
You know, and like family, you could, you know, sometimes get heated and get over the top and, you know, act like you want to, you know, but at the same time, that happens in a family, even the best families, right? And before you know it, you're right back on it again, and everything's fine. It's back to work, you know. And it was a great, great atmosphere. And I always felt like, and this starts with Lynn Cohen and Bruce Toland and everybody in Beltsville, including Mr. Banky, everybody I work with in production, and everybody in every retail is horticulture people at the nursery are very generous with their time, and they just loved a kid that asked a lot of questions. And I asked questions, and I wanted to be there, and it just kind of just took off. So, and I just was so curious. There was always so much to know. You know, you could go and spend the whole morning talking to Helmut, let's say, and then go in and talk to Al Gardner for 4 hours, and you get all this incredible knowledge, but they would never repeat the same thing. There was always so much, and you could do it all again tomorrow. There's always so much to know with plants.
What about the customers?
Yeah, the customers at the nursery were so. Sure, there was the customer that, you know, I don't care what, I just need something to go next to my mailbox and it looked like something, or else my, you know, my neighbors are going to get mad at me, or my wife's going to get mad at me, that kind of thing. But for the most part, there were so many customers that came in with a book under their arm, or they came in with notes, and they had very specific wants and needs. And Banky's was the place to come, right? Because we had a sign on everything, or we tried to. we labeled everything. We had this ridiculous selection that was just, you know, we used to say what we want, the biggest practical selection. And that was always a big deal for us. And no one carried that many peonies or that many iris or that many daylilies or you name it. And that was wonderful to be in that environment. And then, of course, if you're there unloading a truck, you get to see these plants come off the truck every day. And it's always new. You know, for instance, now where I work now, I'm at one site, and those are the plants that I see, right? But when I'm at the nursery unloading that truck, you saw that much more because you couldn't possibly put all that on one site. It'd be 500 acres, you know? So working in a nursery like that was so helpful, was so great.
So why, these 25 years, did you start, continue your education, taking other classes?
In 2007, the fall of 2007, I went back to University of Maryland, and I said, hey, I already have a degree. I'd like to get a degree in horticulture. What do I need to do? And they just said, take 30 credits. I said, well, I can do that. So I took one class a semester, still working at the nursery. And then by, I think, 2011 or 2010, I was done. And then, you know, my dad was in the Army. My mom worked at Walter Reed. So I was kind of like the federal system and, you know, and so forth. And right here in D.C., there's so many great opportunities for horticulture and you know, federal employment. So I applied for a job here with the Smithsonian Gardens as a horticulturist. So, and I've been here since 2012.
Let's go ahead and switch gears and tell me, what exactly are you doing at the Smithsonian?
Right. So in downtown in Washington, D.C., on the National Mall, we have beautiful gardens. People typically know when they look at a brochure, the Smithsonian, or they see a documentary or something, they might see the beautiful gardens right behind, meaning to the south of the castle. Okay, it's the beautiful, what they call the parterre. And it's usually impeccably gardened, just gorgeous, beautiful. And that's pretty much all they know. And they also know the Ripley Garden, which is a little bit, it's between the A&I building, Arts and Industries, as well as the Hirshhorn. It's a beautiful garden done by Janet Draper. And those two areas, everybody knows. But people don't know all the buildings, African-American history and culture, American history, natural history, the Freer, the Sackler, Air and Space, the Hirshhorn, American Indian. All these buildings has gardens all around each one. So, for instance, the building that I work at American History, and it's about 4 acres, about 4 acres of gardens. And there's myself. I'm the horticulturist. And I have one other horticulturist works with me, as well as two gardeners. And that's the area that we take care of. So, and it spans everything from turf and taking care of turf to general maintenance, meaning weeding and clipping hedges and making sure your bed rows are nice and straight and all that kind of good stuff. But also we have interpretation, meaning we want to start the museum experience on the outside of the building, right? So when people walk up to the building, they can actually see something that has something to do with American history or Air and Space or whatever the case may be.
So can people walk around these 4 acres of gardens? Or?
Yep, absolutely. Yes, that's one thing about my garden is totally open to the public. There's no gate. So you can walk up to it 24 hours a day. It's totally open to the public. So it's got a little bit of everything in American history. I have what we call a victory garden. So we're trying to show and tell the story of during the 1940s, during the Second World War, the American public grew like 60% of their produce in these suburban plots in their backyard or in urban settings. So we're doing that there on the east side of the building. And then on the terrace, we have, which wraps around the whole, it's a huge building. You know, it's 800 feet long. So this is a huge terrace all the way around. It's heavily planted with signage and interpretation. So we're trying to tell stories of American history with these plants.
That's pretty awesome. So I take that takes a lot of planning.
Yep.
Thinking it out how you're going to do this.
Right.
And do you change these things up, or once it's in, it's in?
Oh, yeah, we do certainly change. And because the building will change, they have a gallery. It might be open for, let's say, 5 years. We kind of want to go with the gallery a little bit, bring out that story a little bit. Sometimes in the last, I think in 2018, we did an exhibition that was across the whole mall. It wrapped all the buildings together, and it's coming down now. I would have done it earlier, but because of COVID, things got delayed a little bit, so it's a little bit longer. And that was on habitat. So, the idea of urban gardening and sustainability and so forth, we're trying to make a habitat-friendly garden in town or in the city.
So if people were to go to the Smithsonian website and look up the History Museum, would there be information about the gardens, or is this just something you see when you get there?
Well, you can certainly come to, obviously, but also I would, if you want to look on a website, look at Smithsonian Gardens website. So, yeah, we got a website for everything. Smithsonian Gardens website, and I think there's a button for each one of the buildings, each one of the gardens.
That's pretty good. And our listeners, we'll go ahead and have that in our detailed notes after the podcast so people can click on them and make it really easy. What about volunteering if you want to volunteer at the gardens? Because I do know our mutual friend and garden writer, Larry Hurley, volunteered for you.
Yeah. When the nursery closed in 2019, Larry asked me if he could come down and be a volunteer at the Smithsonian, and I was delighted. And he had to go through security and all that stuff, which takes about 4 months. So he really didn't start until that fall. But then COVID hit the next year. So then things got kind of messed up. But we had a lot of really good times last year before he left to go to Wisconsin. But that's one of the great things about working for Smithsonian Gardens and being a horticulturist is that we have fantastic volunteers. So these are people that are retired. And what's also neat, because there's so much teleworking going on, I've got two volunteers now, and they're still working full time. But because they're teleworking, they can kind of massage their hours a little bit, and they can come in when they want. And I'm here to meet them, and we work together, and we weed, and we plant, and we plan the next thing, and we do all kinds of great stuff together. It's a lot of fun. So, and they're usually big gardeners their whole life, and they're very, very knowledgeable. They get to do all the cool stuff that, and of course, they do get access because they get a Smithsonian credentials as a volunteer. They do get access to the building and that kind of thing. So that's a good perk. and different programs that the Smithsonian would offer at a discount and so forth.
So is there a place on the website if you were interested in volunteering?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's also on that Smithsonian Gardens page.
So any funny stories about Larry and his volunteering?
Well, it was always kind of like Larry, you could, there's never a plant that you can, it didn't matter if it was a perennial or a shrub or a tree, or even get into the tropicals. You could say, hey, Larry, what is it? That's really cool. He said, well, that's, you know, so-and-so, you know, and that was like, well, so, but what's funny is that whenever I introduced him to people, I go over to one of my coworkers and say, oh, this is a friend of mine. This is Larry. And he's a longtime gardener. And I didn't want to embarrass Larry. Just want to kind of not surprise people, but they would be like, oh, okay, nice to meet you. And my coworkers would be like, who's the old guy? You know, that kind of attitude. And then after about 5 minutes, they would overhear me saying something, hey, Larry, what's that? And then Larry would launch into one of his wonderful descriptions or explanations about what it is. And then they would come to me later and tug me on the shoulder and say, hey, who is that guy? He knows a lot. Wow. You know, where'd you find him? And that kind of thing. So, but yeah, I can remember working with Larry for the first time. I guess I met him in 87, 88, but then I guess I was just a young whippersnapper and he didn't want to talk to me. But when I got to Largo Production, that's when I started working with him in 92, 93 area. So we go back a long ways.
You and Larry and my brother, but all were into the native plants, weren't you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we all worked in perennials, perennial production. And John Peter was, you know, always the visionary. And he really brought the idea of invasive plants. I think native plants, invasive plants, kind of different sides of the same coin. But he really, really hit home on that invasive thing. And I think everybody, before it was popular, before anybody knew anything about it, everybody was like, what is he talking about? You know, and just kept hitting that, you know, just like Novocaine, just keep a little bit every day, you know, and it really, really sunk in. So
does the Smithsonian have native plants? Do they use them?
Well, that's the neat thing about my job. I can pretty much plant whatever I want in my building. So when I got there in 2020 at American History, I have a lot of liriope and I have a lot of, let's say, red leaf viburnum and all this non-native stuff, but I've been yanking out as fast as I can. So, all right, so as a matter of what we're doing probably next week, I have a little bit of funding that I'm going to be redoing the north side entrances. It's quite a bit. It's about 5,000 square feet. So I got a lot of planting to do. And it's not all native, but I'd probably say I'm about 90, 80% in that area. I try to use native plants as much as possible. And if it is going to be a non-native, it should be something that is certainly not invasive, but it could certainly be beneficial, like, you know, Perovskia or Nepeta or something like that, that are not native, but they're great for bees nonetheless. And they're also good against the deer. So they're not native, but they do fill a nice niche.
Now, wait a minute, say that plant again.
Russian sage.
Okay. All right.
Right. Russian sage.
Russian sage. Okay. Remember, I'm the Banky that doesn't know all those Latin words.
And Nepeta is another one. And there's so many that there are not native, but they do fill a niche.
What are some of your favorite native plants that if I was wanting one for my house?
One of my favorite natives, and probably it is probably my favorite now, and it's nothing extraordinary. You can find it anywhere, would be Asclepias tuberosa butterfly weed. It is just because it is, you know, toxic and, you know, I guess it's poisonous. It you know, deer won't mess with it. I did have one at my house and something ate the tops off of it, but it wasn't the caterpillars. I think it might have been deer or something, but then they left it alone. Maybe they didn't like the taste. But yeah, so a butterfly weed is, or Asclepias tuberosa is probably up there because it blooms all the time, full blazing sun. It just started blooming at my house. I live in Rockville, blooms. It's going to be there 6 weeks. It's just gorgeous. And then, of course, it's great for the larval stage of the monarch butterfly. And then later on, when the adults come, they come to feed on it. As well as I've seen lots of bees on it the last couple of years. I love, what else? For shade, ground cover, I'm very fond of a chrysogonum, green and gold, cute little yellow flower.
Get rid of that English ivy, right?
Oh, got rid of the English ivy. Yeah. Oh, man. So, but yeah, so native plants is something that I try to do as much as possible. And here, for instance, at Smithsonian, where we've got American Indian Museum, that is all native plants. They're nothing but natives. And they're only natives to the American Piedmont. So it's pretty much what we have around here.
A lot of research and everything needs to go into that. So I don't think many people realize that, you know, just because you're going to the museum, that you actually have these gardens, these beautiful gardens that you can walk through.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of work goes into it. In the wintertime, when there's nothing to do, I'm responsible for snow removal. So I do a snow all the way around the building on the sidewalk. So that's a thing. It's if you do all the sidewalk linear feet for the whole mall, I think it's 9 miles that we are responsible for. So even if it's a 2-inch snow, it's a lot of work.
Keeps you in shape. Keeps you young.
Oh, absolutely. You bet.
When you're 80 years old, you'll be directing everybody.
I need to do whatever I can to stay fit. I can pay that much.
That's right. That's right. That's pretty interesting. I actually really didn't realize about the gardens. I didn't know what you actually were doing there. I mean, I knew you were the horticulturalist, and I kept thinking, what exactly is he doing? Is he mowing the lawn? Or
I do that if I have to. And then, so the horticulturists were responsible for, in the spring, I make a presentation to the staff about what annuals I want for the fall. Okay. And then our staff goes to the greenhouse and they, you know, put everything in little, you know, either get the seed or plugs, get them ready for September. In the meantime, come Mother's Day weekend in that area, I take all the fall annuals that were planted the previous fall, rip all that out, put in annuals that for the summer. Okay. And then in September, I take all the annuals that I ordered in March, all get changed again with all fall annuals, but then I'm going to have to make another presentation for how I want next spring to look. So I always need to make a spring or a presentation 6 months basically in advance, and you're constantly ripping out. Totally.
So you get to use your noodle.
That's right. Got to make a big presentation and all that stuff. And
well, tell me about the greenhouse. So is it the Smithsonian's greenhouse or the government's greenhouse or anybody we know working at any of these places?
Well, Joe Gonzalez, who many of our staff will definitely remember. Who can forget Jill working in annuals in Beltsville and perennials too? And she's a grower now. So I talk to Jill probably, I'd say 2 or 3 days a week sometimes, just trying to get with her and ask her how the crop is doing. And she's busily doing the annuals for the spring and for the fall. She also grows the entire poinsettia crop for Smithsonian. So all the buildings get poinsettias in the main lobby when you walk in around the information area and that kind of thing. So she does all that. And she's just like she was at Beltsville, a busy little bee and never sits down and always moving. So
yeah, she and Marion were always just moving.
Absolutely.
So I do know, besides you and Jill, that many of our former employees have gone on to have these wonderful careers with the government and some people worked at Chris Upton went to the Arboretum. It seems pretty interesting to me that they started as teenagers and stayed in this business.
Well, I mean, like I said before, the nursery was great at being able to give you a fantastic horticulture education, you know, as well as, you know, a lot of personal things too. You know, it was great for my personal development, let's say. But as far as horticulture goes, I mean, it doesn't get any better than to be able to talk with Larry Hurley or talk with Mike Bader or Al Gardner or Helmuth. And the other thing is, if I'm driving down the street and if I see a crabapple picking off the top of my head, I immediately see John Reed, right? So in the spring, as I'm driving around my neighborhood or whatever else, I see John Reed every day. Every day.
Those of you that shopped at Banky's, John Reed is the cowboy with the big hat.
And I guarantee you, if I see a blooming azalea, I can't help it. I immediately think it's Opunosian. It's like in my head. It's just boom, there it is. And whenever I see a helleborus, I think of Mr. Banky. And
all the time.
It's just those kind of things. So I'm reminded. And of course, now I work in horticulture and I'm in public gardening. So I'm around plants all day long. So I see these Banky employees standing everywhere all day long. I can't get away from them.
Well, I think that's marvelous. I mean, we are a family. And well, anyhow, we're going to go into our green thumb segment that I like to ask each of my guests. So here we go. It's a couple questions. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. What is the most influential gardening resource of yours?
Well, I mean, like a reference material?
It could be a reference. It could be a website. It could be a person. It could be anything.
Well, I think if I had to pick one reference book, you probably know I'm going to mention Michael Durr's book. Has been in, I don't know through how many editions now. It's probably up to the 10th edition or something. They're not cheap. They're like 60, 70 bucks if you're going to, or maybe more by now, right? New. But you occasionally get lucky if you go into like a used bookstore and there'll be one there for $5, you know, happen to me once. So that's kind of neat. And that's even given probably most colleges and universities when they do trees and shrubs. Michael Durr is you know, he wrote the Bible on woody plants. And as far as websites go, I love the website for Missouri Botanic Garden. They got a great, great website, and it's fantastic. So that's my go-to thing there. And I would say that if I had to pick one book that really changed my life, it would be Doug Ptolemy's book, Bringing Nature Home, about the need and the importance of planting native plants. So, and it's, you know, the science and the logic behind that. So, and Dr. Ptolemy, university professor from University of Delaware, did a great, great job. And you can see all his many, many lectures of his online on YouTube. So
I will put these books down on our, I think on our website under resources, we have a place with the recommended books. So I'll definitely put those there. So, okay, we've talked about a lot of plants during our chat here, but if you had to pick two of your top favorite plants, and they can be trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, houseplants, what would the two top ones be?
Wow. Let's see. If I had, since I did a perennial earlier, I'll pick a shrub now. Probably we'll go with Viburnum nudum. Viburnum nudum is a beautiful plant, fantastic color throughout the season. Comes out so, it's such a shiny, glossy leaf. It's pretty all year. And then the fall color is fantastic. It's just gorgeous. And nice flower. But to me, it's just something about that foliage. I just love the in the fall color. And they do have a lot of cultivars now, like Winter Tour and Brandywine and a couple others that are quite lovely as well. So, yep, native plant. So, and, you know, if I had to, let me throw another shrub in there, would be any of the oak leaf hydrangeas.
I love those.
Hydrangea cordifolia. And there's so many. It's just unbelievable. Oh, and, you know, so for instance, right now at where I work at American History, Dorothy's shoes from The Wizard of Oz are inside the building. So the ruby slippers, the original ruby slippers. So I have a garden, like I said, on the north side of the building, and I'm using ruby slippers, the hydrangea cordifolia, as a nice tie-in. So that'll be kind of neat when that comes in.
That'd be awesome.
Yes.
Okay. Next question. So finish this statement. When I'm not gardening, I also like to
read. I like to read.
Okay. Well, that's good. I like to read too. Okay. And how can our audience find out more about you and what you're doing? I guess we've already talked. We'll go to the website. So that we've kind of answered that question already, and I'll post that. So, well, you know, we've had a pretty good conversation here, Alex, and it's really great seeing you. I really appreciate you taking time. I know you're busy, 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 but I think I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot too. And I think it's important for people to go to the museums, go to garden centers. I think you had talked to me once before about taking walks in nature, maybe at parks and stuff. You know, I hope everybody comes and sees you and looks for Alex.
Yep, I'll be there. I'm here.
All right. Anyhow, I'm going to say so long. I hope everybody has enjoyed today's episode as much as I have. And hopefully, as we were just talking about, you find time in your summer schedule to go to D.C. and visit the Smithsonian Gardens. And apparently, there's Smithsonian Gardens encompasses all sorts of things and all sorts of buildings. So go on their website and pick one and take a trip down there and walk around the building and check out these gardens that Alex and other horticulturists have done for other buildings. I think it's great. We live in an area, if you're listening in the Maryland, Virginia, D.C. area, that we have access. That's a question, Alex. Does the Smithsonian have gardens across the United States too?
No, Smithsonian Gardens is only here on the National Mall.
Okay.
For instance, there is a landscape around the Uvar Hazy Air and Space out by Dulles Airport, out in Manassas, but that's not done by us. I think they just have a landscape crew that just manages it. So, but as far as very manicured, very taken care of, is right here on the National Mall.
Don't live in our area and you're listening across the states, I'm sure there's botanical gardens in your own areas that you can go see and visit, because basically the people that work at these gardens and these museums do love what they do. And if you love plants, then, oh my gosh, that was our tagline. If you love plants, then you do. So anyhow, so let me keep on with my closing. Speaking of something different that Stephanie does, I want to invite people to come see me at the Howard County Fairgrounds for the Christmas in July in West Friendship, Maryland. I'm going to be kicking off the upcoming holiday season on July 23rd and 24th because, you know, it's never too early to plan for Christmas. And I'm very excited. I got a lot of old world ornaments came in and the new Egyptian museum glass ornaments came and a lot of quilling that's a fair trade or greeting cards. So I'll be having those at these craft shows and these home and garden shows that I'm going to be at. You will be able to find out information in my weekly email, and you'll also be able to see it online. I want to thank everybody for supporting this podcast and reaching out to me with your questions and memories about Bankies. If you've been reading my emails, then you know that at the nursery in Beltsville, the structures are now gone. And yes, it was pretty hard to see them come down. And I think it was harder still to watch them slowly fall apart. It was a tough thing for everybody to see. It took a long time, but they're gone. We're not quite sure what this property is going to be, what it wants to be when it grows up. Things happen for a reason. Things change. We do know a 7-Eleven will be going in there, and for the rest of the property, that's still up in the air. I do appreciate everybody that's been writing to me, sharing their memories, and telling me stories about what Bankies meant to you. I would love for you to keep sharing them. I think that's one of the main reasons I keep the Beyond Bankies going, just to keep that, just to keep it, the memories alive. So thank everybody for helping me with that. So if you've enjoyed today's episode, please like us on your favorite podcast directory. Be sure to check out our public forums on our website. You know, everybody sends me questions, but you need to ask them on the website because like Larry Hurley's on there and he'll answer you right away. Alex, have you joined? You can join. So anyhow, join us next month for another episode of Beyond Bankies Gardening Podcast. As always, they will air on the first Thursday of each month. Once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Until next time, this is Stephanie Fleming from Beyond Bankies. I'd like you to stay safe, be happy, and remember, if you truly love nature, you will find beauty everywhere. Bye-bye.